And we're back. Welcome once again to another edition of Mike, Mike, and Oscar. I am your co-host, Mike One, alongside also Mike.
I am also Mike.
We're going to defend the Earth this time, right? We're fighting a lot of bad guys in this episode.
A lot of bad guys.
But not in the Marvel way like we did previously in our MCU review. We're doing more of a Pixar, so we're like cartooned this time fighting bad guys.
Oh, very cartoonish bad guys. Good action sequences, yeah. Laughing babies.
Yeah.
A lot of goods delivered. We'll have some things to say.
Some good and some bad, and we're talking about Pixar's Incredibles 2, the long-awaited, much-anticipated sequel of 2004's The Incredibles. Finally has come out this past weekend.
14 years later.
Yeah, it opened up, and it's going to take the world by storm, and it's going to set a lot of records. We'll get into all that and more.
Brad Bird is the George R.R. Martin of animated films.
And that's going to be the big movie of the weekend. It's going to set all kinds of box office numbers, and we're here to talk to you about it and try to get out in front of it. And we're doing a good job with recent movies lately.
Look at us. Hereditary, like, which is just like this movie. It's basically the same movie, right?
Yeah, pretty much. Hereditary, we covered that.
One,
they're double feature.
Modern masterpiece.
I think they're in the same universe cinematically.
Right. Fans of Incredibles 2 and fans of Hereditary.
a lot of crossover appeal. Yeah, sure.
Deadpool 2 we did. Yeah, we covered Avengers Infinity War. Of course, a lot of movies in the theaters right now with some Oscar chances, surprisingly enough.
Yeah, it's kind of getting down to the nitty-gritty. As summer goes on, I mean, I know we're kind of in the thick of summer, but as this winds to a close, I know it feels like it just started, but this is when the Oscars start to take shape, where they go from this mud and this puddle of clay to starting to get their hands dirty and mold a little bit of an outline.
This is a best animated feature possibility. Isle of Dogs is another. We'll review that when it comes out on video VOD there.
Yeah, to me, that's kind of the biggest takeaway is how stacked animated and documentary, which we'll talk about in another episode, but animated feature seems to be one of the more stacked categories this year. You have The Incredibles, you have Isle of Dogs. We saw a preview in Incredibles for Wreck-It Ralph 2, which will be coming out.
Yes.
Kind of a couple big hitters from some big production companies and big studios that are going to be up for the awards this year.
Lots of contenders for documentary, like you said. Maybe we'll hit on that. Won't You Be My Neighbors coming out wider and wider. So
excited.
Yeah, stay tuned. We're keeping up with the contenders as they are released. We're also going back into retrospectives. We're doing our Oscar music thing. We did the MCU. We're busy.
Yeah, we're going all the way around, and this is one of the ones that we think is going to be up for a Best Animated Feature Oscar as 2019 award show comes closer. The Incredibles 2 is where we are here today to discuss and analyze. We're going to treat this one like an Oscar sprint profile, if not officially. We're going to have a non-spoiler section at the top, go through the specs, the production profiles, the some of the background of the story and where we are, and then once,
a quickie version.
Yeah, when we get to the spoiler dance party afterwards, we're going to talk about the twists and turns of the movies, the plot, the outlines, and some of the best and worst scenes on either side of that as well. And I guess we're going to start off. Michael's going to take us. Or is it a production profile?
It's a full production profile.
I'm tired of getting yelled at about how to introduce these.
Well, there are several aspects of a production profile. There's a cast and crew, bios, there's
what
story inception.
Is a movie.
And there are production notes. This one, it's kind of thin, and it's just basically I'm grouping it all into one. So there was this movie in 2004 called The Incredibles.
Sure was.
It made $633 million at the worldwide box office off of a $92 million budget.
What a chump change.
So it made big money back in the day. Brad Bird was the director of The Incredibles. He had previously did Iron Giant, which he wrote and directed.
A lot of people love that movie.
Another terrific animated movie. I really like it. It's got a ton of heart. It makes you very emotional in many ways. Ratatouille was his follow-up to The Incredibles.
A lot of people love that movie.
07.
Yeah.
Again, I can't believe me watching a snooty food critic eat something that this rat made in the kitchen and thinking back to his childhood almost making me cry in Ratatouille. Again, Pixar brilliance.
To be fair, your family has a connection with food, the likes of which I've rarely seen in other human beings.
Yes, that is fair. Bird made my favorite of the Mission Impossible franchise, the Ghost Protocol. I think it was the fourth version.
Yes, it was.
Of the Tom Cruise stunt spectacular.
The one where he had to wear a mask with Simon Pegg going in, infiltrating the Kremlin. Yeah, it was a good one. It was 7.4, I want to say, on IMDb. Yeah,
I think that was a top five movie of that year for me, to be honest.
Tough to complain about. I walked out of the theater very happy.
He made the flop Tomorrowland with George Clooney. This was, by Brad Bird's own recollection, a road movie that everybody thought was about Tomorrowland, but it was en route to Tomorrowland, and everybody's expectations were kind of blown up. I did not see Tomorrowland.
Nah, me either.
I kind of avoided it. The tomato meter,
which
just
probably speaks to how it was received, if that didn't have any real appeal to us as when it came out.
So that was a flop. So he had been thinking about an incredible sequel ever since 2004. He had ideas back when. He wanted to make sure that this movie was its own accomplishment, was as good, if not better, than the original. A lot of superhero films, as we have discussed in our 10-part series, if you count the Black Panther reviews from February or early March there, a 10-part series on the MCU that we did, there's a lot of superhero innovations since 2004.
Yeah, that's kind of the crux of it all. 2004, this one came out and was so highly praised because what was our superhero taste at that time? Well, we had some of the X-Men films and we had some of the Tobey Maguire Spider-Man films.
Right.
Count Blade in there if you want, but none of the MCU, none of the DCEU, none of the Watchmen, the spinoffs of the lesser knowns. So there wasn't really that much attachment to superhero on film. Certainly not the oversaturation or total saturation. I don't know how you want to phrase it. But there is now.
The Incredibles was pretty innovative in 2004, even though it kind of took a Watchmen premise of these old superheroes being retired by society and forced to live on their own underground, basically under their secret identities, not allowed to be super in public anymore because of all the damage that they caused. And that's worked in a funny way in the original, and it's worked through very well. This movie focuses a bit more on that. And I think Brad Bird wanted to make something unique with this sequel. Now, we're going to talk about it. 14 years to make this movie. I don't know if it was all that necessary. However,
that's called a tease in the business, people.
Yes, he was writing. This movie had some hiccups throughout production. He was writing this for a while and got thrown off track several times. This movie got bumped back several times, notably in 2014. But he did get the whole band back together. He does have a open invitation now from Kathleen Kennedy and the Star Wars people at Lucasfilm. Anytime Brad Bird wants to make a Star Wars movie, they are happy to give him one.
Yeah, and we're going to say what we want about the story and what we saw on film. But once we talk about the box office numbers that this one's going to do, you can see why there's an open invitation for him to do whatever the hell he wants in the Disney world.
Yes, and you can see why Pixar waited for him.
Sure.
They didn't give this property to somebody else. And it's fun that this movie picks up right where the first one left off, literally moments later. He brought back the whole cast. Holly Hunter is back voicing Elastigirl. Coach Craig T. Nelson is Mr. Incredible once again. Sarah Vowell is back as Violet. Huck Minor is Dash. I don't know if Huck Minor was Dash in the first one.
He was not. He stepped in as a replacement for the original Dash.
Right, because it was a kid in the first one. And 14 years later, that kid is talking like us.
I think that's how the audition went as well.
Yeah. Eli Fusil is Jack. I could still voice Dash. I could make my voice like this. This sounds like a kid, doesn't it?
I'm glad you went back to it to finish off the total motif.
Yeah, I had to. Samuel L. Jackson is back as Lucius Best / Frozone. Brad Bird, the director himself, voices Edna Mode once again. Apparently this family's last name is Parr.
Yes.
I never knew that.
They slipped it in a couple times in this movie.
You're right.
Yeah.
You're right. I just think I'm kind of dumb because in the back of my mind, they're the Incredibles.
Right.
Of course they're
under... You just thought it was like Johnny Incredible?
They're functioning under their secret identities. Of course their name couldn't be the Incredibles.
Right.
But when I read the Wikipedia page, I'm like, what is their last name?
Who are the Parrs?
Who are the Parrs? Okay, newcomers...
Bob and Helen Incredible. Nice to meet you.
They're the Incredibles. What the hell is going on here? Anyway, we got some newcomers to the sequel... Newcomers to the franchise, that is. 40-year-old Virgin Star adaptation being John Malkovich's Catherine Keener is Evelyn DeVore. She is, of course, the hipster romantic interest of every IPA drinking male that's ever turned a warehouse into an apartment.
You keep pitching that every time she comes up. All right.
My formative years, Michael. Yeah. Breaking Bad's and Better Call Saul's Saul Goodman, one of the best names of any character ever. Saul Goodman. Yeah. Winston DeVore is, of course, voiced by Bob Odenkirk. You have Jonathan Banks, another Mike from Breaking Bad, mm-hmm. and Better Call Saul. Jonathan Banks is Dicker, the kind of the Men in Black fixer.
He's like their contact in the FBI.
And Sophia Bush, who was another character voice in the first movie, comes back and voices kind of the fangirl point person for the new superheroes that are...
Because they introduce a lot of other superheroes in this one. And I actually thought it was America Ferrera's, but it's okay. Sophia Bush.
Sophia Bush is Void. The composer from the first movie, Michael Giacchino, is back to compose the score. Great job there. So that's really all I got for the production profile. Mike, you're going to head into the specs?
Yeah, a couple specs, and this is where we're going to talk about the box office, and boy, does it put up some box office numbers for its opening weekend.
Oh, my God.
The Incredibles 2, Mike told you, is directed and written by Brad Bird, of course, responsible for Ratatouille, Mission Impossible, Ghost Protocol
was the porn version. No,
he did the fourth Mission Impossible movie is what I'm trying to say. It debuted June 5th, 2018 this year in LA, went wide June 15th, produced by Disney and Pixar, obviously distributed by Disney as well. A 118-minute runtime. There's no listed budget for this movie yet, but I'm sure once this weekend passes, they're going to come out with it because it doesn't matter what the budget was. This thing's going to make money.
Yeah, once they make the schmajillion-bajillion dollars.
It was originally projected to make $120 to $150 million in its opening weekend. That was as of yesterday, Friday, June 15th.
It was supposed to barely break the animation record.
And if it passed 135, it would have broken the mark made by the highest opening for an animated feature ever by Finding Dory. Mm-hmm. Today, which is June 16th, Saturday morning, Variety came out and said, oh yeah, it's blowing by those numbers. Thursday, Friday, it took in $71.5 million already and is on pace for a $182 million opening weekend.
So Disney people, for 2 weeks, who have been moaning and groaning and crying and squealing over Solo, a Star Wars Story.
Yeah.
And now it's party in the streets once again.
I think they did okay for themselves.
The party in the streets up to the Magic Kingdom once more.
Also, just a funny little thing that I saw on Twitter this morning regarding the effect that The Incredibles is having on other Disney properties. Apparently, in some drive-in theaters, or a lot of drive-in theaters across the country, they are showing A Wrinkle in Time, the Ava DuVernay movie, front of Incredibles 2, and they're sharing those box office numbers with A Wrinkle in Time, because underperformed at the theater, which I just saw A Wrinkle in Time, and I've said this on Twitter. I don't know why people were so down on that movie. It's charming as hell. I mean,
we love Ava DuVernay here.
She's great, and that movie I thought was very cute. It's exactly what it was. So, but apparently those box office numbers for The Incredibles 2 are also being used to push A Wrinkle in Time kind of over the $100 million threshold for Disney
as well.
Maybe
it'll become kind of more of a cult classic, do well on video.
Could definitely see it. It's not worthy of all the derision that it's gotten. I don't understand it, but that's neither here nor there.
Rooting for it.
Incredibles 2, 8.8 IMDb rating on 4,400 plus reviews, heftily outpacing the original, which settled in with an 8.0 rating, sits just outside the IMDb top 250, already certified fresh on Rotten Tomato with a 94% critic score, 157 total critic reviews, 147 of those being positive, average critic score of 7.8 out of 10, also has a 91% audience score, which is down actually from 94% it was yesterday when I checked, over 6,000 reviews already there, average rating of 4.5 out of 5. Incredibles 1 sat with a 97% certified fresh rating on Rotten Tomatoes, and actually a 75% audience score, which kind of surprised me, the original Incredibles, on 32 million reviews in Rotten Tomatoes.
Wow.
Yeah. So this is a property that a lot of people like and love and are happy with and excited to see after 14 years.
A lot of people voting on Rotten Tomatoes. Good Lord.
32 million. I was surprised to see that. We talked about in our 91 Best Actress.
Yeah.
A million people doing IMDb for Silence of the Lambs.
32 million on Rotten Tomatoes. Well, maybe we haven't been focusing on the RT numbers as much.
The city of New York voted on Incredibles.
Wow.
So let's talk about we want to start with expectations, anticipation for this movie.
Sure.
What'd you think?
I expected a good movie. Brad Bird's other movies are good.
Disney, Pixar, Brad Bird, yeah.
Disney's movies are good. Pixar's movies are good. The first Incredibles was an enjoyable movie, even rewatching it a few days ago. Now, that first Incredibles wasn't as funny as I remember it. I remember laughing more the first 10 times I watched it.
But yeah, you fit your rewatch in. I tried to. I didn't have time to. I've actually never seen the first Incredibles, but you have a couple times.
You'll enjoy it. I don't think you need to see the first Incredibles to enjoy the second one.
I definitely enjoyed this movie, but just this is where we're coming from. You have the background with the first one, and I'm kind of taking it from the experience of going into this cult. So you have two different perspectives here.
Now, to tease my review a little bit, I think the second one is much, much funnier. And maybe I expected a better story. Like, the first one was kind of innovative, as I mentioned, even though it kind of took from Watchmen quite a bit. But I laughed a lot. This movie delivered a lot of goods. How about you, Mike? Expectations? You're kind of going in blind for yours.
Yeah, like you just said, I went in kind of blind. But it's Disney Pixar, and it's Brad Bird, who's a director and a writer and a producer that I've enjoyed previously. And we talked about his Mission Impossible work. We talked about Ratatouille. Well, every time you have Disney and Pixar teaming up, you're going to expect a great story, and that's kind of where this fell short. You alluded to it just now, that the story was a little, I think you said vanilla in our pre-production. It's kind of blah, a little bit. That's kind of where it fell short for me, but you're right in terms of there are some laugh-out-loud moments in this, some, like, hearty laugh-out-loud moments. Mm-hmm. I would die for baby Jack-Jack. I will do anything to protect that child. It's not fair to expect this, but I was expecting Toy Story. Because of all the hype the original Incredibles got, all the great job that Disney Pixar did with putting together their sequel for Toy Story when they waited 10 years to do that or whatever, I was expecting along those lines.
Yes, I
think it fell short of my expectations, but it's only because my expectations probably couldn't have been met.
So that's my question for you, my big question for you coming out of this is, what do we do with our expectations for Pixar movies, for Disney movies, for animated movies? Do we lower them a little bit or do we heighten them? I guess it depends which Pixar movies we remember. I remember WALL-E and Up being, and Toy Story 3, of course, being top three A movies of those years. The most emotional I ever got during any movie of that year. The hardest I laughed. The best stories of the bunch. So sometimes these animated movies
Toy
hit
Story
it out
3
of the park.
May have made me cry.
I wonder if we're just not expecting that and there's such pleasant surprises. How do we rank, honestly, how do we rank something like Up with the best drama of a year? Like, I don't know, Phantom Thread. Can you compare WALL-E and The Last Jedi or Phantom Thread? Or, I mean, any of these dramatic movies?
Let me follow, answer your question.
Last
with
Jedi
a question.
Is not a good example.
Did you see any of the Cars movies?
I don't like the Cars movie.
But you've seen the first one? Okay. I haven't seen any of the Cars movies because they just never appeal to me. The only Pixar movies I really have exposure to are the classics, like those, like the Ups, all the Toy Stories.
Yeah, I've never seen The Good Dinosaur.
Me either. So it's almost unfair to say you're disappointed by a Pixar movie because, or at least in my case, because I'm only seeing the cream of the crop anyway, you know, the best of the best. So when I see one that falls short of that,
we've watched the kind of the Oscar grabby Pixar movies. We've watched the ones that skew most to adults. We haven't seen the kid version movies.
I think that makes sense, right? I mean, if you have,
and this movie's definitely going for kids.
Yeah. Oh, for total. Jack's the biggest, the biggest takeaway in the comic.
And those kids were laughing. Oh, they're killing. He was killing it. They were number one. All the kids at our screening were up. From their leather seats.
Running around.
In the aisles.
Everywhere.
Hopping up and down all over the place. And there was some...
Between Hereditary and the audience for Incredibles 2, we're never having children.
But there were some kids in the aisles down below us to our right that they were just hopping and giggle fits that made me laugh all the more.
Yes, these kids, totally right.
Every time Jack did something, which it really enhanced my movie-going experience, them laughing so hard at the baby laughing so hard, that was pretty fun. So I guess in a way, sometimes we overhype Pixar movies, like in our own minds.
Yeah, they are victims of their own success, I think.
And
it's not fair for us to judge them by that, but that's what we do, right?
And yet, I guess when we originally were pleasantly surprised by the very best of them, we kind of had lower expectations in a way. WALL-E. Who expected WALL-E to be like the best drama science fiction movie of 5 years?
God, that was a great movie.
Wasn't it one of the best sci-fi movies of 5 years? Really, never mind anything else.
Also, I can't wait to get to that point in the future where I can just totally let myself go and be taken around by chair everywhere. That's my utopia.
And then Up. Who's not shedding a tear during the opening of Up?
I hated that movie. It played with my emotions so much.
And then Inside Out.
I loved it, but it was...
The end of Inside Out broke me. broke me. When something happens, I was a ruined person. It emotionally, I remember I was watching it with my brother. And like, I couldn't look at him. He couldn't look at me. I think we were both contorting our faces, crying at it.
And that's the problem we're talking about. They're so good at emotional manipulation and storytelling.
The short before this movie?
This short was awesome. And I saw somebody write an article saying that this was the best Pixar short yet. I don't know about that. But there's a short in front of The Incredibles 2 called, it has to do with Bao or something about Bao. Yeah,
about dumplings.
Yeah, and it's about an Asian family and basically this woman becomes friends with this dumpling that she makes.
I want dumplings for breakfast. I really do. That was like the greatest thing I took away from that.
It was so fucking adorable.
She and her husband ate we eat cereal, sugar cereal, fine. But they ate dumplings, dumpling soup. That was oh my God, it looked delicious. Of course, once one of the dumplings comes to life, that's the premise.
Naturally, which is terrifying if you think about it, but whatever.
I was also avoiding Mike's eyes sitting next to me during the end of that short because it almost broke me right there.
It was adorable. It was totally adorable. It was like,
well, Incredibles is going to be funny, though.
So, yes, it's Pixar being too good at their jobs, and I don't know if that's fair to criticize them for. But then you have something like The Incredibles 2 with you have this lineage of these Pixar hits, and you have this anticipation built up because of the 14 years, and then you get what we got.
I just watched a 15-minute YouTube video before we kind of dive in. It was like all the highlights of all the Pixar movies, the shorts and the features. And it was amazing just the moments they pull off, and they really cut it together well. And it was like the 15 years of Pixar. It was a beautiful thing.
I'm sure. Yeah. I mean, they're great. What do you want to talk about first, sight or sound?
I would say sight because I think the visuals are just the selling point of this movie. I mean, the first movie was looking great. And then in the jungle, that special island for the bad guys, you had the fight in the city. But this movie ratchets up. And of course, technology's gotten better since then, 14 years later. This ratchets up the visuals. There's even a whole sequence in the middle of this movie that's kind of a different kind of animation. The fight with Screenslaver. I thought that was phenomenal to look at. Say what you want about the story. The visuals of this movie just blew me away. And it should win Annie Awards based on its animation.
Wouldn't be surprised, and you're totally right. The fight scenes, the action sequences you talked about, I know, but the fight scenes in this are awesome. They're on par with any kind of like DC, Marvel movie. They're awesome.
Brad Bird makes the best of the Mission Impossibles with some of the best action we've ever seen, never mind in a Mission Impossible movie. And these, they're toned down a little bit to more of a kid level.
Of course.
At the same time, they're as spectacular as anything in a $200 million MCU, Mission Impossible, whatever kind
of
movie.
You can totally see why that open invitation from Kathleen Kennedy is there, because if he were to take the helms of Star Wars and have an even bigger budget at his disposal,
you do. You have that tension relief. And something Brad Bird said, like, we can't spend too much time in the mundane. We can't spend too much time in the fantastic. Every few moments, we have to keep flipping back and forth during his interview, I think, on The Ring. He said, if we're a while in the house, well, something fantastic has to happen with the superhero powers. If we're just doing too much in a big action spectacular, well, we need to ground
reel it.
Ground it in a human moment. And that's Star Wars storytelling. That's Spielberg and George Lucas storytelling and how they do things. Guardians of the Galaxy, et cetera, et cetera.
His directorial touch is all over this movie, obviously, seeing as he wrote it as well. But he is loaded with talent. I would like to see him take the helm of a bigger production in real time. I know Mission Impossible was like that, but if we could do a Star Wars, why isn't DC knocking on this guy's door to bring him in?
They should be. Production design, what did you think of kind of the futuristic retro? Like, it's in this 50s-60s, right?
Yeah, it gets a lot of points from a lot of people that I've seen.
It's like
that.
The Jetsons.
Yeah, it is. And I'm down with that. I thought everything was fitting that motif and that look they were going for throughout the movie. That futuristic house they end up in, especially, it was very modern, retro chic.
Very funny. Yeah. Just investigating that house. I love the look of the villain. I love the look of the extra superheroes, right? Yeah. All those new superheroes, that new band of them. They were very fun and unique, I thought. And Elastigirl kind of ratcheting up her character quite a bit.
Getting
her agency,
a new suit,
never mind.
Getting a new,
Just the way she's like a sleuth, and kind of those scenes are dark at night. And it's just the visuals were eye-popping. It's worth the price of admission right there, however much you like this movie. And I just want to say the Frozone action is the coolest thing, pun intended, but not intended.
Jump on you.
It's so cool to look at. Like when he shoots those ice walls that he skis over, and how he flies through the city, and then when he actually throws the ice at somebody or whatever, and then when he makes it snow, I just thought that was so awesome. Every time Frozone's on screen, I want him to have his own movie because it's just really awesome.
Yeah, and it's pretty cool how. I mean, I know nothing about physics, but they kind of, it works in your mind with what he's doing, right?
Yes.
If there were an actual superhero with these actual superpowers, they don't go too far with them. There's limitations on him, but he's able to follow. There's one point where he has to do something involving a train, and he's right. able to guide this train using his powers, and it all makes sense to you. It's nothing too fantastical that's like, come on, what are we doing here? It's like, oh, you're it's real enough to buy into, which was kind of cool and kind of on point.
It's the sound, I guess.
Yeah, let's go to the sound for a minute. And you said this was the composer that did the same for the first one,
Giacchino. It sounds like a 1950s spy show,
yeah,
right? A lot of that score,
which I appreciated,
and it also kind of comes to a James Bond movie like crescendo here and there. So it worked really well in the first movie. You know, he kind of gave it a reprisal with this film. It just works.
I'm not gonna go above and beyond and laud it and say, oh my god, how great it was, but you totally, if, like I said when they're Hereditary review, as long as the score sets the mood for what you're ever supposed to be appropriate, I'm in. And this one definitely does that and then some. So more than adequate sound for me, for a score for me, I mean.
So we usually review the performances at this point. It's an animated movie. We're talking about voice actors. We can talk about some voices, but I figured maybe we'd just focus on the characters a little bit. We've said something about a few of them thus far, but so what do you think about the characters? I thought Jack-Jack steals the movie.
Of course.
He is
without
hysterical,
question.
That little baby. Gets me every time, even though I kind of know what he's going to do. In a way, I kind of know what he's going to do. He surprises me just enough. Again, the delight of the little kids in our theater.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
and that's what he was there for, but it's one of those things where it's meant for kids, but adults can definitely appreciate it too.
I'll elaborate more in spoilers because there's a couple scenes just killed me.
Awesome. He's
just
so funny.
Killed me. I like the Mr. Incredible doing the Mr. Mom thing at the time. I like when his
arc, we got a big gender swap here, a gender role reversal, which I appreciate.
Now, some of his speeches were a little bit strained, I thought. I thought it was very didactic where he's just like, and he's, so that was a little over the top for me though, and it kind of forced where the comedy really didn't pull off. I mean, obviously they overcome it like a few moments later when Jack-Jack does something ridiculous, or you know, so I'm not gonna kill it,
right?
But you know, I just don't want to see him growling throughout that my wife shouldn't be doing that, I should be doing this. That's
right.
Kind of annoying. Elastigirl, Mike, how innovative and cool was all the action sequences with her. Now, we thought we saw some stuff in the first movie.
Yeah. Like, it goes back to Brad Bird for me, because if he's the one that penned this script, which he's the lone screenwriting credit, his innovation in giving these people with these powers to do all these new things, not least of which is Elastigirl, who really is the main protagonist for this movie.
Right.
I know the first one was more family-oriented. This one has the family orientation as well, but Elastigirl really has the spotlight for when there's solo scenes. It was awesome. I know it's kind of a weak word to describe it, but she's really going out there and given the length of her powers, and she has to use it in creative ways and adapt to different situations. And that goes into how great the action scenes were.
We'll elaborate more on her in spoilers, but yes. Now, Brad Bird, what I would want to see him do for MCU, we talked about Star Wars, but come on. I mean, Fantastic Four. I mean, the Schmoes guys are all over this.
Yeah, Mr. Elastic.
They said it was the best Fantastic Four movie they've ever seen, the first Incredibles movie, the Schmoes. And they're absolutely right. Like, Brad Bird should be the number one top choice if Disney buys Fox's Fantastic Four.
It's tough not to draw that parallel when you're watching this.
I can't resist that. All right, any we gushed over Frozone. Well, we'll talk more about the villains. I think in the spoiler section, I thought they were kind of predictable.
Though, yeah, they go a little in line with the problems I had, and well, I'll expand more on those in the spoiler section.
So to kind of transition, we wanted to say a few things on the script. The Act 2 is mostly from the father's POV and the mother's POV, and then kind of Act 3 is a lot dealing with the kids. I thought that was a little bit strange. I guess it works in theory. You know, you have mentor heroes teaching the kids how to do stuff, and then the kids have to, you know, show you what they've learned in the third act. I guess that works, but it was a little strange for me. You could have put more POV. You could have put agency for the kids.
Was Act 2 in this movie necessary? I mean, you start the movie with the kid, the parents needing the kids to do something, yeah. And then at the end, the kids just end up doing
it. Yeah, it was fun. I mean, you have five major action sequences in this film, which we'll talk about. But you're right. You're right. Is it super duper necessary?
Right. I don't know. It's just that's kind of the problem I have. We'll get into it.
Again, you wow me with the action and the animation. You make me laugh consistently. I'm not kind of all that focused. I'm all right. I don't care as much. Right. So a strong choice. I just wanted to say this movie begins exactly where the last film left off. I thought that was really, really fun. The Underminer.
I thought it was interesting to go 14 years and trying to expecting people to be able to pick up. Like you said, you don't need to see the first one. Obviously, I haven't seen it and I didn't need to, but I just thought it was an interesting artistic choice.
Well, I caught you up when the movie started. I was like, Mike, this is about a family of superheroes.
Yes, you did. You're like, oh, thanks. You did mention that, yeah. They're making dumplings.
Oh, God, that would be good. Plus 10 points. I love dumplings. All right. Possible best worst scenes that we can talk about without spoiling anything. Best scenes for me, any scene with Jack.
Can I say raccoon? Can I say that? I mean, sure. That's not a spoiler, right? Here. Yeah, there's a scene where Jack is at the height of his powers fighting a raccoon. Which is basically the squirrel from Ice Age, by the way. Oh, it was tough not to see that, but
killed me.
It was Jack fighting this rabid raccoon. Hysterical.
Well, I don't know rabid, but yeah.
Yeah, whatever. Well, it kept coming back to him.
True. True.
Jack was kicking its ass and it kept coming back.
That's
but yeah,
as hard
hysterical.
As I've laughed all year so far. I love all the big action set pieces. We'll kind of talk more about those, break them down a little bit more. I did say the movie's predictable as my worst scene. I'll have a specific worst scene in spoilers.
Same here. I got some issues with the story.
All right. Oscar Lenz, Michael. I think this is a shoo-in for best animated feature in terms of a nominee at this
point.
Yeah,
I can't imagine it doesn't. Like I said, there seems to be a three-headed monster this year. People were kind of excited about Isle of Dogs, and then that subsided once it came out. Now, people are excited about Incredibles. Our excitement might be waning a little bit, but obviously other people's aren't. This is going to make $200 million almost in its opening weekend, so there's a lot of anticipation for it. Who knows what Wreck-It Ralph does in the coming months as well, but so for me, there's those three that are hard and fast that should be shoo-ins. Right. You could say what you want about the Academy not going for the big box office movies, but that doesn't seem to be the case with animated. Animated, they usually have their blinders on.
I think it's a limited field every year. I mean, how many groups can make an animated feature?
Sure.
There's not 300 films to choose from. There's 20.
Right.
You know, so the bigger, you know, the ones that deliver more goods, like Isle of Dogs and Incredibles 2, there's no way these don't get nominated. I cannot see that possibility that after the staggering visuals of both those movies, they're two of the nominees. I mean, it's simple.
Now, I'm with you.
Some years we've had arguments being made from Toy Story 3 to WALL-E to Up, all the way back to Beauty and the Beast when it actually happened. You had a crossover hit where a animated film is actually nominated for Best Picture. That is not going to happen here. Director, screenplay, technical categories.
Would be very surprised. Would be very surprised.
No way, right?
If you want to done enough to kind of make the point already, but if you wanted to talk me into a Brad Bird for Best Director nomination, based on what had to be accomplished in this movie, I could kind of see it. I think the story keeps it from happening. I can't see this being anything but an animated feature for me.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think I agree there. So some final thoughts. I still think the story works well enough as a delivery system for the action and comedy. I was surprised at how funny this movie actually is.
I was
how
too.
Visually spectacular and how these action sequences play so well. Say what you want about the plot. Like, the plot is predictable. The action sequences are anything but. And yeah, but they're very coherent, very easy to follow. I was really into that. How about you? Any final thoughts?
Yeah, the action sequences, the visuals are kind of what the biggest takeaway for me was. Jack-Jack is absolutely hysterical. It's a good movie. There's more. I think the good definitely outweighs the bad in this movie.
So a watch for the both of us.
It's a watch, but don't go in, like you said, expecting Toy Story 3 or you know, don't go in expecting... Somebody put it best. I think it was Screen Rant or maybe it was Variety. I can't remember. But somebody said if this movie had come out 2 years after the first Incredibles, then you would think, oh, it's a great sequel. But I think having the 14-year wait and the anticipation built up so much, I think people might be more down on this than is worthy. We may be more down on it than is worthy. We'll see in our spoiler section. But don't go in expecting one of the all-time Pixar greats. If you go in just expecting a Pixar movie, I think you'll be surprised. So watch it with that lens.
Sounds good.
Yeah, let's dance. Spoilers ahead!
This is a spoiler warning.
Spoilers. 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 Spoilers.
Mike, and Oscar Sprint, spoilers!
All right, we're getting back into the groove of Oscar season with that song coming up more and more, but this is the spoiler section for Incredibles 2. We're going to talk about the twists and turns of the plot, some of the outcomes, our best and worst scenes. If you are coming too far, if you have not seen the movie yet, or you do not want to hear about what happens or our takes on what happens, go back and listen to the first 30-some-odd minutes of this podcast. We talk about the specs, the box office, etc. back there. From here on out, we're all spoilers all the time for Incredibles 2, so let's talk about some carryovers, Mike.
Bad villain. I wanted to mention that right off the
bat. Confusing villain.
Confusing villain. I think we all understood that the brother-sister DeVore, one of them or both of them were...
I think this movie got by too much on trying to get you to think that Bob Odenkirk was going to be the bad guy.
Sure.
And then pulling off the, oh, it's Catherine Keener's character, because, spoiler, Catherine Keener's character is the bad guy.
I was thinking both of them were, but, and then, so I was slightly surprised that he was not a villain, that he was genuinely, you know, out to help the superheroes, and the sister was...
I don't even know if I would call it surprise. To me, it was just like, oh, okay. You know? It's her, not him. Cool.
You knew, otherwise they would have dove into the screen slaver persona. Like,
right.
You don't hide the ball on a villain that big in any blockbuster movie. Like the Joker, you have muscle flex scene. Well, the only time screen slaver really shows up is when he's on camera just a little bit, on TV, right? When he takes over a screen early on.
And whether it's screen slaver or the Catherine Keener character, what is the motivation? What is it? I mean, for me, it was just like it was a bad guy because the movie is about superheroes and superheroes need a bad guy. There was no the only motivation I could tell.
Well, she does like a little bit of a monologue where she says that she's angry at her brother for basically still being in a child's mindset of his parents would have survived if superheroes were legal, but the daughter and his sister
said
that basically they should have just went into the panic room. And so they're both at that one incident, that Batman-like incident where the parents die, right?
Right, and then when the Incredibles are wearing the glasses, there's glasses that Catherine Keener's character who has engineered that kind of turn these superheroes into zombies.
Which is perhaps the silliest aspect of the movie, because why don't they have backs to him? All they have to do is be flipped off.
You're totally
barely flipped off.
I was thinking, and Jack-Jack's able to move it with just his eyes, apparently.
Yeah, that's the super silly. Again, I really don't care because I like this movie a lot in many ways.
Yeah, I was more disappointed by the story, I think, than you were. To me, I harp about capable protagonists, capable antagonists, because that was lacking here. Obviously, you have more than capable protagonists here, but the antagonist was, for me, was just severely lacking, and the motivation I didn't think was anywhere. There's the story about the parents, but it's not like that was harped on enough. Like, what I was going to say was when the Incredibles are wearing, when they signed that contract to reverse the law, the motivation spoken by Mr. Incredible is that you've shunned us for too long, and now we're going to do bad things. It's like, okay.
And then, everybody's kind of glosses over that. Nobody readdresses that moment at the end.
Weird.
So that didn't work either. Not at all. There's some really over-the-top exposition when Screenslaver just rants over Elastigirl hunting him down. That made me cringe because he's like on this evil monologue, right? And it's just going off and talking about big picture stuff in the text of the movie and basically calling everyone out for being at that movie and enjoying something at a distance, right?
And that's what I mean. What is this guy's motivation? Is he anti people looking at screens? But his superpower is that people have to be looking at screens.
Right.
Like, what are you doing?
So I think the final worst thing that I wanted to mention, at least for myself, is that this movie is very, you know, forcibly inclusive, which is a good thing. But the fact that it's just so obvious, all right, we got to have a best friend. He's got to be African-American. He should be Samuel Jackson. Like, it's just so obvious. You got a white family, and then we're just kind of strong-arming in about a black best friend. That annoys me. Because it's not really incorporated. I love Frozone, but that's from the first movie.
I was going to say, was the first movie a friendship between them established?
Because, yes, very much.
Well, then I'd have no problem with it because.
Well, that's fine, but, you know, we got to.
No, Frozone doesn't play a big role in terms of the family dynamic in this one, but his action sequences are very necessary to save them.
Yes,
so
absolutely.
I don't have an issue.
I love the character. I just think they could do more with it, I guess I should say.
Yeah, no, that's a fair gripe.
And in this movie, when they make the feminist statement, it's very forced. And it's awkward dialogue, and it's some of the most on-the-nose dialogue of the movie, like I said. Mr. Incredible moaning and groaning about it.
But it's also a kid's movie.
Mr. Mom stuff, yeah.
You're not going to hide it. You're not. Your gripes are...
It's an eat-your-vegetables kind of thing, which is, it's all good stuff to hear.
Right.
But you could have candied it up like everything else and made it innovative in how you got through with it. I think other Disney movies have done better from Brave all the way on down.
I'll agree
with Pixar
that.
Movies. And this movie kind of just forces that. It's almost like, you know,
there is good stuff. It says the gender role reversal is kind of cool, especially to put into a kid's movie for young boys and girls to see. I thought that was awesome. The jealousy aspect of Mr. Incredible not being the one that Bob Odenkirk wants to put at the forefront of this. You think it's on the nose dialogue. You thought it was strained. It's just a weird choice for me to see because it doesn't have a payoff.
No, not really. Because
so is he
kids,
still just seething?
Again, the kids are the payoff in many ways. Like, he overcomes it in Act 2. And so you go through a whole series of the father learning to be okay with the situation and learning the math and learning. And that's a great sequence. It's fine.
Yeah, you get to see a father be a father and have to be close to his kids. That's great.
But none of that pays off in the third act,
right. Really.
The kid doesn't use math to solve anything in the third act. It's the kids basically left on their own, which was, again, happened in the first movie, happens in a lot of movies. Mentor hero, obviously, if you have a mentor hero, whoever you're teaching needs to come through for you in the third act.
Yeah, the movie starts with them addressing the Underminer, which is where I guess the first movie left off.
Yes.
And the incredible parents are telling the kids one of you has to stay with Jack. Obviously, neither kid does, and that leads to kind of them getting in trouble. And then at the end of the third act, it's one of the kids, Violet, saying, I'll stay with Jack. And that's supposed to be like the big link.
Yeah, no, it didn't flow quite well for me.
I agree.
And I did want to mention, why did this movie not end with the Underminer? I think that is such
a missed opportunity.
You can end each movie with this Underminer character because he's kind of ridiculous.
That wouldn't be a bad idea. Why, I was going to ask you, what did you think about the Underminer just being like the guy at the beginning to prove that we still have powers and set up the conflict?
Yeah, that was a cool sequence, just trying to basically, and I guess we're going to start to get in the rest of our best scenes and really get specific about those. I thought that was an awesome sequence. Again, Frozone stuff blew me away, how his powers influence just that whole world there with all the ice. It's just so cool.
Yeah.
And then, of course, the family team up. You see them at their best in action, right where the first movie left off, the Underminer showing up and the family has to fight them together. And then actually seeing it not work perfectly was fun. And then, of course, with the turtleneck boyfriend.
Nice turtleneck.
Why was that not mentioned? Turtleneck? Are you really? Anyway.
You're upset that bullying wasn't part of Disney's movie?
No, I'm just saying it's a really stupid turtleneck.
But okay. Good. On a drawn figure.
However, It was
Use your eraser, idiot.
It was an awesome action sequence, basically taking that giant drill and
it was,
keeping it from the...
just outside. And that's another thing I appreciated. I would say it was a best scene. Yeah, the Frozone ended up having to ice this giant drill that the Underminer was using, and it just caused minimal damage on Town Hall instead of bulldozing it.
Right. They have to this do the scene, stuff underground, yeah, too, which was funny. We were laughing like idiots.
This movie did what Marvel movies I gripe about, and we both griped about. Like, why aren't there more civilian casualties talked about? And this movie actually addressed it, because part of their having to save and stop the Underminer is getting all the people out of the road and saving them. And you have the Elastigirl, you know, having to stop both sides of traffic while he comes through the overpass.
Yes.
You have people actually being saved.
Dash saving the old woman.
It's actually addressed and was really cool to see. And it's the little things like that I think we're so impressed with Brad Bird about, whereas the big story kind of was lacking for us. Another question I wanted to ask you about, I don't know if it fits in best scene or worst scene, there's political statements made throughout this movie, and not like subtly. There's people find that a monkey throwing darts at a dartboard are more trustworthy than lawmakers. That's like something. True. Like, what did you think about all those statements being so at the forefront of this kids' movie?
Well, I agree with them. So I think we're all sick and tired of government in many ways, both sides of the aisle.
Well, government plays a big role in this. You have things like that, but you also have the whole family dynamic is them being hidden in a motel because the laws are still against all the whole reason that Bob Odenkirk wants Mrs. Incredible is to change the laws that outlaw superheroes.
Most superhero movies stay clear of politics in that way. We praised Civil War and some of the Avengers stuff, and obviously X-Men for basically working with authorities, and even Deadpool 2. Like, the cops are in the movie.
Right.
The authorities are in the movie. They work through, and they work as a force in that franchise. And here, it's front and center as well. Obviously, you're doing things to undermine it.
Hey-o.
And I like that kind of thing going on. It raises the stakes in many ways.
Sure, yeah, that's a good point. So it really did.
It works. So I do you want to continue with the action sequences? Because
those are the best scenes, right?
Yeah, I have some more, but yeah, I do. The runaway train was so cool with that bike.
Awesome.
What she's doing with that bike.
I thought the design of the bike was really innovative too. Yeah, totally.
They kind of fast forward her learning how to use the bike. Now, we've given other movies crap about that.
Fair. Like,
all of a sudden, she's a master at
totally
this
fair
piece of machinery. Except she does get a couple scenes where she's figuring it out. That's fine. All right, but that was so cool on how the bike can separate.
Yeah.
And her elasticity can make her basically go anywhere on the bike. She's like going up buildings.
So it's like this motorcycle that separates into two pieces because she can handle the front piece with wherever her arms are and the back piece with wherever her legs
are. So innovative. I mean, think about Mr. Fantastic. He hasn't gotten half the writing that Elastigirl has gotten.
Can you name one thing any Fantastic Four member has ever used?
Oh, no, they haven't used any props.
You know, this one has the Incredible Mobile. It has Mrs. Incredible's bike.
Again, Brad Bird would be so perfect.
He really
so
would.
So welcome. That fight versus Screen Slaver, the different type of animation, kind of the neon version of the Pixar animation, I thought that was the coolest visual of the movie.
It's my best scene, without question, and it's not... What blows my mind most is it's a little thing, but okay, this is a cartoon, but the action sequence, you can see everything happen. Like, they don't skip.
Right.
Like, if you're punching, you see the punch land, and you see the guy react.
Sure.
And it's all done against this background of, like, basically this disco light flashing in your face, and it's still very clear. Yeah, it was so well done.
Yeah, strobe light action sequence with that.
Strobe. I couldn't think of it. There you go.
And that's a cool character, and he's sneaking up on her. It's almost like a horror movie scene.
Yeah.
It's like Don't Breathe sequence in the middle of this movie, and it turns into an all-out fight, which is a pretty brutal fight for a kid's movie, like you said. And Elastigirl doing some innovative things. They're getting hurt as well, which was surprising. Like, what's-his-name gets the upper hand. Screen Slaver gets the upper hand. Now, the fact is they kind of totally diffuse the stakes from that scene by basically making him just like a robot or a mind-control pizza guy later on.
It was the fallout of Halloween H2O, which he chops off Michael Myers' head and turns out to just be a guy.
Right. The last two...
The lesson here is everything goes back to Halloween and Michael Myers, of course.
You sent me a text last night. You said, we should give things stars. But instead of stars, we should use Michael Michael Myers masks. And then I was like, wait, what?
Just wait until our June and July preview. That's all I'll say.
Anyway, the fight at the DeVore Mansion, right, with the, all the superheroes being controlled and all the, and basically brings the kids back into the fight. The stuff Frozone was doing, again, just blew me away in that sequence.
What was the girl's name? Void?
Void, yes.
Her power, I thought, was really innovatively awesome. Used. The biggest problem, I mean, the visuals, we'll keep talking about them and how great they were, but there was no big end game that they were used for. You know, the bad guy was not really a bad guy at all. It was just, she doesn't really even get her comeuppance in battle.
No.
It's
yeah,
all
I know.
Based
it's,
on those sunglasses.
Yeah, it, based on the glasses, and the glasses are kind of done away with relatively
right,
easily.
Exactly.
Even though there is kind of a pay,
and that's
a miniature payoff for each one of those side characters.
Right, but that's kind of the, and that's such the downer for me about this movie as I'm working through my feelings right now. It's like, you have these great visuals and these awesome battle scenes, and then you got to remind yourself, and it all led to nothing.
Well, here's the thing, though. The Runaways, yeah, you're right. I mean, in terms of thematics and terms of stakes, and again, like the whole, okay, we have this worldwide thing that's broadcast all over the world happening, then we scare the literal crap out of everyone in the world, which is not mentioned anymore by the superheroes turning against the public,
right,
which
it could
have
been
like a crazy, you know, implication,
exactly.
Right? But then none of that's talked about. They're just like fists.
They're zombies that don't move. Yeah.
Yeah, afterwards, and then they're fine. Everybody loves them again. At the very end of the movie. But that runaway speedboat chase with the whole inclusion of the plane, inclusion of the Void character, that was awesome. Now you have that plus all the Jack-Jack hijinks within that action sequence. I thought that was brilliant. And the kids are basically looking after Jack-Jack is fighting.
I've seen some complaining that the Jack-Jack powers didn't mean anything and they didn't go anywhere. I disagree with that completely. He's a big part of the end sequence. Say what you want about what I just said about there being no payoff and no big bad that they're fighting, but Jack-Jack powers are used. They are a means to an end.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the girls shoot his eyes at
things
in that scene. And then, of course, Jack-Jack escaping finally, really escaping the brother-sister babysitting, and the brother-sister have to take care of him instead of really fighting the bad guys. It just really worked. It gave the parents agency again. It gave them all agency. All right, so I guess the best scene that we wanted to drive home before we move on is Jack-Jack versus the raccoon.
Give me 90 minutes of that. Give me 2 hours of that battle, and I will be happy.
I laughed hard at Deadpool 2. I laughed harder at this.
Did you?
I was dying laughing.
Laughing, yeah. I saw your body shaking.
Yeah, I was just trying not to laugh too hard because you were next to me not quite laughing as hard, but you were laughing.
I was laughing.
People
it was very
like
funny.
I wanted to laugh like the kids in the front row were laughing. That's how I wanted
it's
to
like
laugh.
It's like 6-year-old, 3-year-old, 4-year-old, also Mike.
I got very self-conscious during that scene because the other people we were with weren't laughing as hard either. So yes, very self-conscious, but I was just like just gasping for air, laughing so hard at this freaking baby fighting that raccoon. It just killed me. There's also another scene with Jack-Jack, or sequence really, Jack-Jack and Edna Mode,
yes.
The fashion designer.
Yes.
He's with her for a day. She's like averse to babies. And then all of a sudden, we're thinking it's going to be a nightmare that happens there, or a disaster. And of course, the next day, the father goes back to pick up, and he's got the full suit. There's a hysterical demonstration on what the baby
it's
does
awesome.
In the suit. And then the baby and Edna Mode walking away. The baby has all the mannerisms.
Yes.
He has all the mannerisms. Yes. And then Edna Mode, I'm dying laughing. In
very
that
funny.
Well.
I would make the argument that there's enough Jack-Jack in this to justify the price of admission alone.
Yes.
Do you think this leads to a Jack-Jack spinoff?
Well, I could see a Jack-Jack like...
Minion's got a spinoff.
He could get a spinoff, or he can just be like get his own like made for TV movie or made for
sure
whatever the Disney streaming service movie is.
That's a good point. Yeah.
Like if they really want to oversaturate it, because Bird takes 7 years to make a movie where they can have.
If there's a spinoff, I don't think it would be. I can't see Bird having doing that.
Right.
I think he's bound for bigger and better things.
So that would totally make a world of sense to me because they're going to basically see this movie make $1 billion or $1.3 billion, whatever it winds up with. And they're going to say, all right, we need more Incredibles. So should we do a spinoff while Brad Bird makes the trilogy, something like that. So I agree with you. That makes some sense. All right, so I guess we can wrap this baby up.
Yeah, let's get into some final thoughts here. Overall, very funny movie. Unexpectedly funny.
Yes.
It falls on the spectrum of Mike 1 to also Mike. Are you more story-driven and villain-driven? If you are, you might be more disappointed with this movie. Mm-hmm. If the visuals, if you're there for visuals and you're there for characters and basically comedy
True.
Points, high comedy points, you're going to find more than enough to satiate you.
I remember a stupid skit. I think it was on Comedy Central. No, it was in one of the Harold and Kumar movies. Anyway, the villain and some goofy thing that was on the screen. He was like, oh, bullets, my only weakness,
yes.
That's like this, like, yeah. Comedy, my only weakness. Like, I'll approve of an Adam Sandler movie that's terrible, but it made me laugh 10 times. This movie made me laugh 100 times and once really, really hard, maybe twice really, really hard. So I don't care what it does. I really don't care. The movie delivered goods. So the fact that it has wonderful action, it's going to totally screw up my grade.
I was going to go first for that. I'm an 85B, solid B.
I get it. I can't argue with you. I think that makes sense. I'm going to be like you always say, I'm not a man of principle.
Well, I'm 110 A++.
No, I think I gave it a B+ 89.
That is a little higher than I thought, but that's fine. Yeah.
And I think I think that's fits for me.
Your inner child is more alive than mine is. Mine's been slashed down by serial killers.
Yeah, I, and like Logan had some story problems last year, and that was a B+ 89 where it finished for me. It delivered a lot of action, spectacular goods. It delivered a lot of fun scenes and sequences early on. I hated some of that story. It pissed me off so bad, but
not the only
even
one.
Still.
Yeah.
Like, it's weird how movies do this for me. Like A Quiet Place, I got really angry at the story. Right?
Yep.
And I did what you just did. I gave it an 85 when most of the people I know and my brother and whomever that grade movies like me, like a dork, like we've always done, they all gave it B pluses. You gave it a B plus.
I did.
So I could totally see that argument. It's weird how this movie plays for me and then those movies didn't. I don't
it's,
know.
It's just, it has to do with what you apologize or what you excuse a storyline for.
Oh, I'm totally doing that.
Yeah, you are more lenient with comedy. I think I'm more lenient with horror and thriller type stuff. Yeah. And that's where it lands. But what did you guys think about Incredibles 2? Did it live up to the expectation of the first one? Did you see the first one or did you not? If you didn't see the first one, did you go into this one with different expectations than someone who did? We want to hear all that and more. Be sure to reach out to us, Mike, and Oscar on Facebook, Mike, and Oscar on Instagram, MM and Oscar over on Twitter, MikeMikeAndOscar.com, MikeMikeAndOscar@gmail.com. We actually got a lot of good feedback. A couple people texted me, got some messages on Twitter and whatnot about our Hereditary reviews. Thank you for those. We really appreciate those.
Thanks.
If you guys like what we're doing, if you could leave us a recommendation, review.
Yeah, a review on iTunes that organically really just helps us advertise ourselves on the biggest podcast platform there is. So please, if you can, spend a minute or two and write us a few sentences with clicking that 5-star. That really helps us. Thank you.
And if you do, maybe we'll read it on air, and we really appreciate that. Tell your friends. We're everywhere, iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, etc. You'll see our bright, smiling faces if you type in Mike, and Oscar. And reality does suck, so keep watching movies like The Incredibles, like Hereditary, and like Deadpool 2 with us. Any final words?
Jack, man. Hysterical.
We'll end on that later, guys.
See ya.